So, we live in the flesh, but we're called to walk in the Spirit. God is a Spirit, and those who worship Him must worship Him in spirit and in truth. We're called to become friends with and worship an invisible Spirit. And God very rarely enters this realm in His fullness. So we're called to enter into His. We're called to enter into the spirit realm, to enter into His presence. We're called to boldly enter into the throne room of God. We're called to enter into His gates with thanksgiving and into His courts with praise. So my question is, how do we do this? How do we do this in the spirit realm if we live in the physical? And so in order for me to feel like I adequately can answer the question, we got to talk about a few topics that we've probably been told we're not supposed to talk about. But it's okay because Randy just talked about one of them today. So witchcraft, sorcery, mediums, we've all heard this from the Bible, soothsayers, divinations, necromancy, that's a bad one. We've all heard of this. We're going to talk about drugs, we're going to talk about psychedelics, mushrooms. We're going to talk about meditation, New Age meditation, trying to attain to the astral plane, as they call it. Paranormal activity. Everybody's heard of that. Ghosts, that kind of thing. We've all heard of the idea of mind versus matter, the mind-body dualism argument. There's one side that says that there is basically no mind, that you are your brain. Your brain is the product, they'll say, of mindless, unguided processes because they don't believe in a mind. They believe in the brain. Everything's physical. There's the other side of the spectrum that believes that the mind is separate from the brain, that the brain is, in a sense, a receiver, and the mind would be the transmitter. Basically, you can call it whatever you want, your mind, your consciousness, your spirit. It's something outside of yourself that your brain receives the information from. We're going to call it your spirit because that's what we believe. We're in the church right now. The mind is where this thing takes place called your imagination. So the imagination, I believe, is something that's been very looked over these days. What we're told a lot of times, you hear somebody say it's just imagination. It's basically synonymous, how do you say that, with the word fake. If it's imagination, it's fake. And I don't believe that to be true at all. I believe that our imagination is one of the most powerful things that we have. If you simply think about it, everything that you see, anything that's ever been made by man, the chairs that you're sitting on, anything that you came in, even if you're looking through your glasses, everything that you see was first seen in imagination before it was out in the physical, before it was made. Everything besides maybe kettle corn, because I think that was an accident. But everything that you see was first seen in imagination. Our Bible talks about that, how God saw us before we could be seen, before we could be known. He knew us. God has an imagination. We have an imagination. They've done studies where people can sit down and they can imagine themselves putting their hands in ice water. Like not just having the thought, actually sitting and consciously thinking, imagining themselves putting their hands in ice water and their body will react and their hands will actually get cold. You can do the same thing with heat. Imagine putting your hands next to a fire. It takes work, it takes practice to actually imagine that well. But your hands can actually become warm. Your body reacts to your imagination. They've done studies on muscle mass gain. They would have a group of people that would work out to gain muscle, and they would have a group of people over here that imagined working out at the same amount of time, but the ones that imagined it would still gain muscle mass, not as much as the ones that actually did it in the physical, but there's still, it's still productive, there's still results, a significant amount of results. If you think, well, no, back to the muscle thing. There's a name for it. They actually do it in the recovery for people. It's called motor imagery. They do it in sports training and stuff where they have the people imagine doing the workouts that they're supposed to do, and it helps them when they actually go to it. You can look it up. It's motor imagery. It's really cool. They use it for people in rehab. That's what it is. They do it in rehab. Imagining it actually helps them heal faster, get stronger, recover faster. It's the same thing with stress. It's mostly in the mind, getting yourself in the fight or flight mode, especially here in a first world country where a lot of the stuff that we call stress is not actually life threatening, but our mind is actually telling our body that it is life threatening. And that's what causes all the damage to the body, all the extra cortisol and slowing down the metabolism, all the stuff that stress, that the fight or flight does. It's all in the head. And I'm not trying to say that people's stress is imaginary, it's fake. I'm not saying that at all. But they're not life-threatening, usually. Your imagination, I believe, is one of the most powerful things that we have. A lot of times people tell their kids to stop daydreaming. I think the kids need to tell the parents to start or do it more. We've all heard of ghosts, of spirits, of mediums, the spiritualists, the people that communicate with them, the people that talk with them. We're not supposed to do that. I'm pretty sure everybody's heard that. We're not supposed to communicate with the dead. So I'm just going to start this with a story. So I was working as a custodian at a high school. I would work until midnight, from 3:30 till midnight. And every night after you would shut the lights off for the night when the activities were done and pretty much everybody's out of the building. So it'd been 8, 9 o'clock at night, and it's usually dark. We would start hearing footsteps through the halls, and you'd start hearing keys jingling. You turn the lights on and walk around to look, and nobody's there. You would hear things. I remember one day there was probably 8 or 9 of us custodians. We were in the break room taking a break, and somebody had brought this up, so we're talking about it. And the boss walks in, and she heard what we were talking about, and she goes, oh, it's whatever, and she says the guy's name. There was a custodian that had actually died in the school. He'd hung himself in the auditorium behind the stage, but it had been like 40 years before at this point. It was decades ago. But you could hear this. It's just, you know, in my mind, at that time anyways, I was thinking it was just our mind, you know, we're just hearing stuff. It's just a product of your own fears or something. But everybody else was experiencing it too. Well, my boss brought me and one of the other guys up to this gym. It was called the upper gym. We had to go up the steps, and that's all it was a gym. There's no bleachers or nothing. It was just for gym class, no activities. So we walked up there, and she said, all you got to do is stand up here just right inside the door for just a few minutes, and you'll hear him. You'll hear him coming. And so we did. We stood there, and all of a sudden you hear footsteps coming from across the gym. The lights are off at this point. And I remember telling her, saying, no, that's Ed. He was in there hiding because there's a closet over on the other side. And she said, no, it's not Ed. So she goes and she turns on the lights, and there's nobody there, and the footsteps stop. And you could hear them getting closer while the lights were off, and then they come on, and then they just stopped. So right there, it kind of made me a little bit more of a believer. I would go to the weight room for a while there after, at midnight. I would go with two other custodians. And for some reason, one night, both of them couldn't show up. So I went to the weight room by myself. And I walked in, and this was well after the footstep time, and I was intrigued, so I was looking into some of this paranormal stuff. And that was the one thing that pretty much everywhere I looked, they said not to talk to these things. So I walked in the weight room, not thinking anything of it, and I shut the door. I turned the lights on, and I could just feel like something was staring. Something was staring at me. I'm not much of a guy for feelings. I kind of brush them off as often as I can. But I couldn't. This one, I could just feel it. So I walk over to the desk real slow, and I go around and I turn on the radio. Well, I set my keys down first on the desk, and I turn on the radio, and I turn around, and I'm watching the drawer of the desk behind me open in slow motion. I thought, well, maybe it was because I set my keys on the thing and something was off balance maybe, and the drawer was opening. So I just shut it and tried to ignore it. Went around the desk, just took a couple of steps, and that feeling just got so bad. And it was just like a kid when you tell them over and over not to do something, and they do it. My brain was telling me over and over not to talk to this thing, don't say anything, don't talk to it. But I had to, so I did. So all I said, in my mind, speaking to this, what I thought was a dead custodian, I said, are you in here? And I turned like this at the same time because I was looking around. And right off to the side, there's a rack of medicine balls. You know, the balls that are heavy, they're weighted. So the medicine ball on the top of the rack flew about 5 feet off the top, nailed the wall, and hit the floor. And so I walked over to the medicine ball, trying to act like nothing just happened. I picked it up, I put it back, I turned off the radio, I grabbed my keys, and I left. And I never stayed in that school again by myself. I never stayed for overtime. I never went back to the weight room. I didn't want to be involved in that. I don't know everybody's stance on the paranormal, but I know that spirits are real, that they exist. I don't believe at this point, I don't believe for one second that thing or any ghost out there is a dead human spirit, like we're oftentimes told. I don't believe that for a second. I believe to be absent from this body is to be present with the Lord. If you're not born of the Spirit and born of the flesh, then you're somewhere else and it's not on this earth. I believe these things, these entities, are quite obviously they're the enemy. They're spirits on the other side. Call them whatever you want. Evil spirits, unclean spirits, demons. You can call them whatever you want. But like in the voodoo religions, they talk about how They will take on the spirit of their ancestor, their grandparent or something. When a child is born, they can take on the spirit of their grandparent. The parent will ask the spirit to come into the child. People that get saved out of that realize and recognize that they are not actually the spirit of their grandparent. They're just the spirit that dwelt in their grandparent while they were on this earth, much like Randy was talking about today. Spirits can dwell in people. We know that if we read our Bible just once, that spirits can dwell in people, can dwell with them. So they're just enemies on the other side, just trying to confuse us, make us think that there might not be a heaven, there might not be a hell. We might actually just roam this earth when we die, be able to haunt something. That's just to add more confusion. So no, we don't want to dwell on this stuff, but it is important, I think, to acknowledge it, just to know, just to understand what these things actually are. Jesus, on the Mount of Transfiguration, he talked to Moses, he talked to Elijah. The Bible tells us that Elijah didn't actually die, but he was taken. But the Bible tells us that Moses did actually die. So I guess I am of the mindset that it's not necessarily wrong to talk to people that have passed on. I believe, well, I'll put it this way, I will talk to my grandpa every now and then. I'll say, hey, I can't wait to see you. I'll say, I wish I could have just had one more day with you, something like that, but I will never ask him to talk to God about anything for me. I will never, like in the Catholic Church, we were raised, if you lose something, you pray to St. Anthony and you ask him to find it for you. He was the patron saint of lost stuff. And I still, to this day, it's so engraved in my head that when I lose something, that's actually the first thought I get, is to talk to this saint that has passed on and ask him for help. That, I don't believe, is good. That I don't believe that is right in any way. But yet, Jesus did talk to Moses, and Moses did die. It's okay for us to talk to spirits. It's okay for us to talk to angels. God is a spirit, and we talk to him. It's okay to speak to the other realm. I'm trying to figure out how to word it. It's okay to do that, but it's not okay to ask others for help. Saul, when he went and he had a medium summon up Samuel. I can't say this emphatically, but I can tell you that I don't believe that that was actually Samuel that was summoned up. I don't believe that at all. I believe that that was one of these spirits. It was a medium that summoned him up. I don't believe, I think that Abraham couldn't even leave paradise to go put a drop of water on Lazarus's tongue. I don't think Samuel would have come up and talked to Saul just because Saul wanted him to. I don't think a medium could have that kind of power, but they could definitely try to trick Saul. And I believe that's what it was. I believe that's why God wanted those, all the mediums, all the soothsayers, all of that stuff out of the land of Israel, was because of that, because they were communicating to the other side, to the dark side, however you want to word it. They were communicating with the enemy. So, psychedelics, I don't know if anybody knows that's tried mushrooms or has heard about this or talked about them, but oftentimes people that take psychedelic drugs, they talk of these incredible experiences that they have, and they're quite obviously not physical experiences. But the cool thing about this is that the people on the mind side will use this as evidence that the mind is not the same as the brain, because when they're on these drugs, the brain activity, they'll scan people while they're on them, brain activity actually diminishes, lessens incredibly, but their visions become way more vivid, way more intense, way more real. They'll come out of these things and they'll say things like they knew all things, you know, it was realer than real. Their experiences were just incredible spiritual experiences. But when they wear off, they say things like they put back on the veil of the body. They can't remember everything that they experienced, everything that they saw when they were outside of this. This is the same kind of concept when it comes to meditation. There's a guy out there, I guess at first I didn't recognize that he was probably a New Age guy, but I believe he absolutely is. His name is Joe Dispenza. He does all kinds of conferences and stuff. He does studies on meditation, and he encourages it, and he does these conventions and conferences where they have people come in, and it'll be the same kind of idea as being on psychedelics, but they're trying to reach, he says it oftentimes, alpha brain waves. I'm not 100% sure on that, but it's the same concept with this meditation where you relax the body, you relax the brain so much that the brain activity diminishes, but your experience increases again, and it's very intense and very real. Very, very real. He has these conventions, and people have actually, in this state, when they reach this state, they have actually had chronic illnesses healed. They've actually had these conferences where people's tumors would sometimes fall off. They have had, and it's documented, they've had people walk in blind and do this meditation stuff and walk out able to see. And it's crazy, and I know first thought it can be scary, yeah, and it feels like you're stepping in something you don't want to step in from our mindset. But we got to understand there's a story in the Bible, you guys have all heard it, when Moses was, the first time he went up to Pharaoh, God had told him to throw a staff on the ground, right? Turn into a serpent, pick it back up, turn back into a staff. Our Bible tells us that the Egyptian magicians did the same thing. So do we believe our Bible? The first plague that Moses brought, he turned the water of the Nile into blood, and the water in the buckets and the pails in the land into blood. And our Bible says that the Egyptian magicians did the same thing. The second plague, Moses brought frogs up from the Nile, and they infested the land, infested the people's houses and their bedrooms and stuff. And our Bible says that the Egyptian magicians did the same thing. Our Bible says that. I believe it to be true. There's a book that was written about 100 years after Jesus. It's called the Epistle of Barnabas. It's not scripture by any means, but there's lots of books out there that have good insight that are not scripture. But in this book, whoever wrote it, it's pretty much widely accepted that it's not Barnabas, but whoever wrote it, I believe it had interesting insight. He was, one point, he brought up dietary laws in the Old Testament, and he said, kind of explained the reason for some of them. One of them being the reason for not being able to eat catfish, only being able to eat the fish that had scales and stuff like that. You couldn't eat catfish because they made their abode in the bottom of the sea, in the depths and the dark, underneath the muck of the bottom of the river where nobody could see them. And we're not supposed to associate with people like that. We're supposed to be children of the light. We're supposed to live in the light. And he brought up another law, the one about the cloven hoof. We're allowed to eat the animals with the split hoof. And he says we're allowed to do that because they represent the people that walk in the flesh and walk in the spirit at the same time. And he brought up, like the swine, we're not supposed to eat them. They don't have a split hoof. They only walk in the flesh. And about how pigs are only kind to their masters because they want to be fed, only basically for food to be taken care of. And I think Jesus makes a comment kind of similar to that, telling the people that they only came because they wanted their bellies filled. To me, it is interesting insight. There's a reason why people desire these things, these experiences, these spiritual experiences, out-of-body experiences. There's a reason for that, and that's because we were created to walk in the flesh and walk in the spirit at the same time. People desire that because they were created for that. But if I were to walk in here next Sunday and I had a duffel bag here and I was walking around telling everybody that God has just blessed me, and I unzip and I got $2 million in my duffel bag. And then Monday morning, you guys read in the paper that Franson Bank just got robbed over the weekend, and they're trying to figure out how it happened. There is, like, prosperity is a good thing. I think we can all accept that it can be a good thing. But there's a right way to do it. There's a wrong way to do it. All this stuff, all these avenues are ways to access the Spirit, to enter the Spirit, however you want to word it, to walk in it, to deal with the Spirit, to communicate with it. But they're all the wrong ways. This is the point. This stuff is real. And we need to acknowledge that and not be scared of it and not talk about it. We need to acknowledge it. We need to do it the right way. There's these near-death experiences I think are really cool too, these out-of-body experiences where people have they say the same things that people say on psychedelics, that people say in this meditative state where they reach the astral plane, where they're actually communicating with things on the other side. These near-death experiences are the same thing. They come back and they say that they knew more than they should have known. They'll know things that happened while they were gone, not in the physical. There's a thing called terminal lucidity. I don't know if anybody's heard of that, but there's been lots of study on that lately. People who have had Alzheimer's and dementia, because we know that stuff's on the rise lately. So studying it is on the rise, obviously. But there's a phenomena where people are coming to the last week of their life, and family members will come and they'll be telling the doctors and the nurses that their loved one is getting better because they're remembering so much more. They're remembering more than they ever have in the past decade. They're remembering things, they have more knowledge than they have for the past decade that they've been sick. They can communicate, and they remember names of people they didn't remember for the past few years. The mind people, the brain people can't explain this because their brain is dying. The people on the mind side of this argument, this is proof for them, because the brain is dying, like the brain being a veil is getting out of the way, and they, the real them, is able to come through and communicate better, because now the brain, which a lot of people coming back from these experiences say is a veil, the brain is now getting out of the way. We actually see this in scripture one time. I don't think I'm reading into it by bringing it up, but Stephen, when he was being stoned to death, he actually was at the point of death, obviously, because he died. I don't know if he took a rock to the head, more than likely, but right before he died, he saw into heaven, and he saw Jesus standing at the right hand of God. Probably damage to his brain. Another cool point, I don't know if you guys have ever heard of the, you know, through hypnosis, sometimes through the meditation, them monks that will get to the place where they feel no pain. They can be hit, kicked, stabbed, whatever it is, they feel no pain because they have meditated out, however you want to word it, out of their body. Yeah, that's another cool one to think about. So I guess for the most part, my point for today is that there are many, many ways to access the Spirit, but there's only one right way to do it. Jesus mentions in one of his parables that he's walking through the wedding feast and he sees a person there that was in there without wedding clothes on. And he asks the guy how he got in there. He said, "Friend, how did you come in?" And the friend, I don't believe he responded, but he got cast out into outer darkness. I don't know how to articulate it perfectly, but I think you guys will understand. I would rather die young of a terminal disease or something and stand before the Lord knowing that I didn't try to sneak in the wrong way versus like these people that do this meditation versus trying to access the spirit realm and being healed physically through these wrong ways and standing before the Lord and having to admit to what you've done. I think that'd be a very, very scary place to be. John talks about it. He says he was in the Spirit on the Lord's day. Peter, when he was on the roof praying that day, it says that he was in something like a trance. In my mind, he was out of these visions. They take place obviously outside of your body, not in your physical brain, because your brain activity diminishes. That kind of knocks that out of the park for sure. But he was in something like a trance when he had his visions that he saw three times with the sheet coming down with the unclean animals representing dietary laws and reaching the Gentiles. Paul saw into the Spirit on his way to Damascus while he actually heard, I think he saw a light. I can't think right now, did he actually see Jesus? I think he saw a light. He heard into the Spirit. You can hear into the Spirit too. It's really cool. If you read, which we will next week, any of the Old Testament prophets, all their visions, all their dreams, all that stuff, it's really cool. They saw into the Spirit. It says oftentimes that they saw, they watched. There's only one way that would make sense. It didn't happen in the physical. The stuff happened in this place that we call your imagination. But it's not the imagination that we think of these days. It's the real imagination, the real you. Like, again, he was talking about today, Randy, the real you. I don't remember all that he said, but that's another way of looking at the real you that is outside of you. It's not, you're not just your brain. You're not just the flesh. So next week, or in a couple weeks, we're going to actually get into walking in the Spirit, how to walk in the Spirit. I guess I kind of wanted to touch today on a lot of these ways not to. Like, I don't feel it's talked about enough. And I thought I'd do that, so. All right. I'm done. Next week. Thank you, guys.